Greetings and welcome to the For the Ride podcast. I'm your host, Adam Vanderveen, and as always, all the views and opinions expressed on the podcast are solely those of myself and the guest. So today is pretty unique. We're at Americade. It's great to be here. It's the Saturday. It's a gorgeous day. I have a really special guest with us, who I'll introduce in a minute, but first I'm just going to go through all the standard fare. So first and foremost, t-shirts. Nobody gets one today because there have not been a new comment since last week. So we would really love to hear from you guys. Log on to Apple Podcasts, leave a comment, leave a question. We'd love to hear from you, and you're almost guaranteed to win a free t-shirt. All right, the other thing we are promoting is ridership and new ridership specifically. So with our partnership with the Motorcycle Safety Foundation, if you log on to TriumphRider.com, we are giving away a free voucher for the basic rider course. It's a 3-hour online course, and it is a prerequisite to get your motorcycle endorsement in almost every state. This is a great segue into today's guest. You might not associate this person with rider training, but it's Jeff Stanton. He's a six-time motocross champion, so the legend in motocross terms. He's going to speak to that in full, way more eloquently than I can describe his background. More recently, Jeff has created an adventure training school. It's called Jeff Stanton Adventures in Michigan. We're going to dive into that. You can get hands-on adventure bike training at Jeff Stanton Adventures, and really exciting, Jeff Stanton Adventures is the first in North America Triumph accredited adventure partner. So really exciting news that we're going to be launching this week, technically next week from when we're recording, but when this episode goes live, it will be the same week that we're making that announcement. So without further ado, we're going to get into the interviews.
I got the key to the highway. I'm all packed and I'm gonna go. Lord, let me ride out tomorrow, honey. I won't be back no more. Yeah, goodbye.
Hi, Jeff. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be here at Americade and out riding with some rally guys. We can call it a rally because we rode some Tiger 9 or 1200 yesterday. So a great time, great event. Sun's out. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, we've lucked out. So last year was my first year ever coming to Americade. It was the first year that Triumph was here in I believe about 10 years. So it is a gorgeous place. I loved it. I think we as a brand love being here and around these great riders. So we decided to come back and it is your first time here, right?
It's my first time here. I've never been up here in the Adirondacks in this whole Lake George area. Just a gorgeous area. Whether you're riding a street bike or a dual sport bike or an adventure bike, just awesome riding up here, awesome views, and obviously the weather makes it. When it's sunny and bright, it's fun for everybody.
Yeah, it certainly is. We're just looking at mountains right now. The sun is shining on my back. We're looking at mountains. I'm pretty inspired right now. I think I want to do more of these interviews live instead of in a hotel conference room or some other uninspiring place. I mean, so the drawback, you guys probably hear the hum of the truck behind me and you're going to hear some motorcycles, but I mean, hey, this is a motorcycle podcast, so I don't think some motorcycle noise is heard.
It's live and it's real. There's nothing fake about it. It's put together at 7 in the morning. The sun's coming over the mountains, and so yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, this is perfect. So So Jeff, I'm not sure if you've heard the podcast or have you done a lot of these?
I have done quite a few podcasts, and yes, I've listened to the podcast, and so, you know, it's a growing trend, and so everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, and it's an honor to have you take a hold of that, and not like you need any more projects, but it's good for all our viewers to hear it and the Triumph family to listen and to be a part of all of it.
Yeah, well, no, thank you. Yeah, no, certainly it is another project on the plate, and you know pretty well. I've been lucky to get to know you over time, but you've seen some of the craziness of what my schedule looks like. But I really do enjoy doing these, so it's good to do it. But so since you've heard it, you know the format a little bit. We're gonna get into the adventure school, but I'd love to just, you know, formally get to know you. And actually, funny enough, we've hung out a number of times and we've actually never talked motocross.
Well, that's you know, I don't mind talking about it. You know, I'm not one to you know, bring up the past and bloat on you know what I did and what I accomplished, but I'm not afraid to talk about it.
Well, I believe. Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, I'm sure it's rare for you to be around people that don't want to talk about that, but yeah. And we've had exciting adventure bikes to talk about and things. So, but for this, I'm sure a lot of the audience would love to hear about that. So we're gonna dive in a little bit. But I mean, let's start at the beginning. So you. You've grown up on a farm, and that was probably your childhood. So, right, your farm is a multi-generation farm.
Absolutely, yeah. I started riding motorcycles on the farm. You know, my brother and myself, parents bought us bikes when we were little, and we started chasing cows around the field, herding up cattle on the Stanton farm in Sherwood, Michigan. I'm the eighth generation. My son's the ninth generation on the farm. Big family farm that's been going forever. And so, yeah, that's how it started. Just riding mini bikes around the fields and, you know, chasing cows and calves. And as any sport does, one thing leads to another. My parents bought property up in northern Michigan in 1974. And we'd go up there and ride in all the national forest. And that's where I learned how to ride. And then you go from learning how to ride and the basics to racing amateur races all through the state of Michigan. State of Michigan in the early 80s was just the hotbed, the Florida now, if you'd say, of racing. We had so many top riders, and so you always had somebody to look up to. You know, I was on a mini bike. There was the Keith Bowens and Eddie Warrens that were just super fast and phenomenal. So you always had someone to look up to. So, yeah, and then just racing amateur races all throughout the United States, and was fortunate enough to win a bunch of Loretta Lynn's titles as an amateur growing up. And, you know, when I'm 14, 15 years old, then you decide, well, hey, maybe I can make a career out of it.
Yeah.
And had great sponsorships throughout the way, and then turned professional in 1986. My parents told me that I wasn't going to turn professional and travel the circuit until I had my high school diploma. And not at the time, you like, dang, that doesn't make any sense, but you never know, honestly, if you're going to make it in the racing world or not. And my parents were like, you're going to have something to fall back on, and you don't see that in today's world at all.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious, and it's so ultra competitive now, I don't even know if you could make it without dedicating that young and really having to take the gamble.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword, you know. Mm-hmm. the gap that people are super successful and make it and can retire off of it is super small. And so I see it all the time and I hear it all the time. You know, we're pulling our kid out of school and we're going to homeschool, and, you know, then that usually falls apart. I know a lot of kids that are in the top ranks that have an eighth grade education, and that's sad to me. That's one thing that I've always said, how can I help that out in this sport, the sport of motocross. But yeah, there's, like you said, the dedication is so strong on the parent side, and the commitment is so strong on the parent side, and the amount of money they spend to get these kids to the next level in today's world is just astronomical.
Yeah. So let's, I do like to take it back as much as possible a little bit. So you grew up on the farm and you were riding mini bikes. What was the transition to even having like a first competitive environment for racing?
Well, it was kind of unique. My brother and I, you know, as brothers, you have that competitive flair. And so, you know, back in the late 70s, when I was 6-7 years old, my brother was just a year older than I was. We always had that competition together. So as young boys, as you know, if we weren't fighting, we were always trying to beat each other in something. And motorcycles was that for my brother John and myself. We had a track out in the backfield, and so we were always back there battling each other, knocking each other down, and more than once we were throwing fists at each other, because you know as boys you get mad at each other and go through it. But I was super fortunate to have a older brother that was actually probably a better rider than I was, but he grew so quick. He got super tall, and then he got hurt real bad at Loretta's one year and was kind of done. But just that competition as boys, and we rode together all the time, and then we started racing together in that competition. And so that was the fuel and the drive.
So basically I have already unintentionally bred my children to be motocross champions because they are 3 and 5 and they're ripping on their Stasics around the backyard nonstop. But it is a competition. I mean, I think they wouldn't do it without each other, but next to each other, they're going hard and they're crashing into each other.
That's that driving yeah. force for boys in competition, that whether it's baseball or football or soccer or Stasics or motorcycles, that's just how the testosterone works.
No, that's funny. I mean, I'm sure they're going to play lots of sports together. This happens to be the first one that they can do together, just because the little one's not old enough to be in any of the competitive sports yet. But I mean, that's coming next fall.
Absolutely. No, that's a great thing. And as a father, that's awesome to be able to share that with your boys. And, I did that with my children as well. And, it's awesome.
All right. So hey, I'm going to ask you, let's get a little closer to the mic because I'm hearing so much of the truck hum. I'm curious if we get closer and really get our voice, I bet my producer can turn down the sound a little bit. All right. So, started getting competitive with the little brother and then went on to Loretta's. Now that's interesting. So this is, as we know, and as a lot of our listeners know, Triumph is coming out with off-road product and we have made the announcement that we're going racing. So for me personally, I've been preparing a lot. I did not grow up in that world. My riding background was growing up in Wisconsin, it was a little more cruiser influenced. So I'm deep diving into the off-road world. I watched the full season of Supercross this year, and mid-season it was interesting that they were showing a stat that all the top guys, I don't know, something like the 10-20 years ago, they were all like Loretta Lynn champions, all in the same class against each other. It was the same top five guys now were the top five as the 10 or 11 or 12 year olds at Loretta Lynn's. Did you see that when?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. It was the same way back then that you had to go to those national championship races to be able to get the sponsors to look at you and to see you. And so, yeah, it was the same way 25 years ago as it is now. We raced every weekend all over the country. You qualify for a regional and an area, and you did the whole Loretta Lynn's and not just Loretta's, the mini Olympics, the same races back then as there is now, but obviously today's world is so much bigger, so many more people, and the intensity is up there. Like I said earlier, the amount of money that these parents are spending on rigs and bikes and expenses to get to the races, there's just a lot of added pressure on those kids to perform. So I was fortunate enough to be able to win a bunch of races at Loretta's and have a bunch of Loretta Lynn's national championships as well.
Oh, they were cranking up some motorcycles. So I think, I'm just going to excuse ourselves to the audience. This is not going to be the most audio crisp interview we ever do, but again, this is a motorcycle podcast. So you're going to have to suffer through listening to a bunch of a really nicely tuned Triumph triple engines during this interview. That one, I'm just going to give a minute for anybody to guess what that was. You can play it back, but do you have any guesses? All right. That was a Street Triple RS, if anybody really knows their engine sounds. All right, so moving on a little bit, because we could just talk about that as every bike gets fired up, and we're not going to do that. So you did that. You did juniors, turned 18. Then your parents finally allowed you to really go after it. What was that progression then?
So my won a couple of titles at Loretta Lynn's in 1986. And as they do now, the guys that are making that progression, they hit the last couple of outdoor nationals. And so my first outdoor national was in Washougal, Washington. In the 500 class, 500 cc class. We had 500 cc class back then, and I did super great. I was in the top 10, finished 7th overall, and that just kind of steamrolled from there. Being from Michigan and being on a farm, I was a big farm boy, and so I won titles in the 500 cc class and the 250 cc class at Loretta's, and I was known for being the big husky guy. Everybody expected me to win 500 cc titles and 250 cc championships, and I just, I was on a Yamaha back then. I had a great Yamaha background, Yamaha support all through my amateur career and my first three or four years professionally. So 1987, you know, I did the full Supercross season, full 250 outdoor nationals, 500 outdoor nationals, and you know, the 500 national championship, I finished second that year and just kept getting better and better. 88, I was still on a Yamaha, did the full Supercross season, top five in the 250 outdoor nationals. Again, in the 500 national championship, I was second behind Rick Johnson, battling for the lead the whole time, and caught the eye of, you know, some people at American Honda, and signed a contract in the end of 88 to ride Hondas for in the 1989 season. And everybody wanted to be on a Honda back then. It was like the place to be. Honda was the best. They had the best bikes, the best technology, the people around the whole facility. And that's I didn't even have to think about it. When they came to me and said, "Hey, do you want to ride for us?" It was like, "Yeah, I'll pay you to ride for you." It was one of those right. deals, because that's, you know, they produce champions, and everybody there was who you wanted to surround yourself with. So signed a contract and started racing for Team Honda in 1989.
All right. And then what was championship number one?
That was the first year, 1989. So Rick Johnson was the guy at American Honda then. Ricky kind of took me under his wing, and I lived with him that whole winter. We trained together, we rode together. And to start the Supercross season out in 1989, Ricky went out on a tear. He won the first seven Supercrosses. And I was either second and third behind him, was having, you know, a great year. Come Atlanta Supercross, like the eighth round, I was just knocking on the door every race. He made a mistake, fell down, and that was my first Supercross win in 1989 at the Atlanta Supercross. And it just kind of steamrolled from there. We went from there to Gainesville, Georgia. And unfortunately, Ricky got landed on in practice and severely broke his wrist. And I surrounded myself with a great team and good people, and was in great shape. And that's when I really took over from Atlanta, my first Supercross. And then we went to Gainesville, Daytona, first outdoor national, won that. And I just steamrolled. I just went on a winning streak and started winning titles and races. And like I said, was fortunate to be on a great team, have great people around me, and won the Supercross title in 1989. And the outdoor national championship in 1989, and continued to back it up for a few more years there.
That's amazing. Well, so one thing that really stands out to me is actually how vividly you remember all those details. And I'm a little bit different. When I all the sports I've played, I don't have that. I just lose it. I think I tune out anytime I've played football or I've had a fight. Like, I'm so tuned out, I can barely remember.
Really, it's, you know, I think in the motocross world, any top guy, they can go back. And, I mean, there's tracks, I can tell you where the bumps were still, you know, 20 years later, still where the bumps were. I think that's part of being a motocross champion is being able to go out on a track and recognize that track and photo process it in your mind, and to be able to do that every lap and see the changes every lap. And that's just the whole part of progression of focusing and making that whole program come together.
That actually makes a lot of sense, because you're not only reacting to what's going on in that race. There's so much preparation on every single race, every single track, and knowing it in and out. That yeah, of course you would retain that, because it's just so repetitive.
Absolutely, hugely repetitive, and in year after year. I mean, we still go to all the tracks, and they've changed them up for years. But it's the focus of putting those tracks in your brain, whether it's a Supercross track or an outdoor track, and being able to do it at a top level, continuously, lap after lap.
Yeah. So I'm sure this comparison has been made in the past, but we've never talked about it, but I imagine this that there's a big correlation between your farming background and your success as a racer. Did you learn a lot of things growing up on the farm that really contributed to being able to be a championship level racer?
Absolutely. And it was just the hard work and dedication. So as throughout my amateur career, I mean, being on the farm, we didn't have a lot of luxuries. We didn't have a lot of money to be able to go out and buy big rigs and motorhomes. And so my dad and myself and my brother, we cut wood all winter to be able to get enough startup money to be able to go racing, you know. And so you just appreciate that more, you know. You give me a kid, even in today's world, that their parents struggle a little bit and have to fight for everything they have, or you give me a kid that the parents are maybe wealthy and spoiled a little bit, you give me that kid that has struggled, he's gonna make it a lot further in the industry or the world, because he's gonna appreciate it a lot more. And that's kind of the background that we came from. You know, we had to work our butts off to be able to afford to get to the races. And so when you do get there, you appreciate it, and you appreciate the hard work that you put in, and then you can put that towards your racing, and get the things that you want to achieve out of life.
So that I think that really helped you get there with all the hard work, but I think it also really helped that when you did get the success, it didn't change you. You're humble now. I imagine even as a champion, you're still humble, and I think that background probably had a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
So interesting enough, I happen to know that yesterday morning, I wouldn't be surprised if you told me you did it again today, but yesterday morning you went on it must have been a crazy early run, because you were on site here by 7:30, and to get a full run in prior to that, I mean, that's pretty impressive. What time did you wake up to do that?
Yeah, I was up a little bit before 6 and out for a morning run. You know, fitness in our sport is obviously huge in our backgrounds, and it's just something that's installed in me. I enjoy training, and I still enjoy training. Running was a huge part of my success when I was at my farm, because running is just the best, quickest way to stay in shape. Over years, I don't run that much as I used to, because my knees and my back have taken a toll from all the abuse. So I mostly bicycle now, but when you're on the road, you do what you got to do. And so, yeah, I had an awesome morning run, and saw some cool sights here in the New York area. And it's just good to get out and open up the lungs and get the blood flowing first thing in the morning every morning. And it's just it's installed in me.
I love it. So I think we can share. I don't think we're going to get in trouble. You saw something really cool yesterday morning.
Yeah, I did. I just posted it this morning. Staying in Saratoga, so I got up and went for a run, and went by the big horse facility there. The gate was open. I'm like, hey, this is cool. I'm just going to go run in here. Nobody stopped me. Kind of ran in and went around the big horse track with the grandstands, and it was all like freshly prepared and prepped. It was really cool. So took a couple of pictures there this morning, man. I was thinking, if that place could talk, there's a lot of history that's happened in all them big horse arenas, Kentucky Derby and here at Saratoga. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Oh yeah. So there you go. If you wake up at 6 a.m. and go for a run, you might just be able to get access to things that you would never otherwise get access to.
Yeah, I actually tried to sneak in there with my car this morning on the way here, but there were some security guards, and they're like, no, get out of here.
Too late. All right. So I guess that's a good segue to why we're here, actually. And a little over a year ago, that last season was actually your first season. People say a soft opening. I almost want to say last season was a soft season. But you now have a adventure riding business that combines adventure riding experiences and adventure training, Jeff Stanton Adventures. And we've been Triumph has been privileged enough to partner with you in this venture, and it's going great so far, and I think we're about to take it to the next level. But tell me a little bit just about the origins of that business.
Yeah, so you know, I retired from racing, and riding and racing is always been huge in my background. And I told you, my parents bought property in 1974 up in northern Michigan, and we spent a bunch of time riding in northern Michigan. And Michigan has just so much to offer. Northern Michigan is just vast amounts of national forest, and the riding is just endless. And so for years, I've wanted to do an adventure business. And so just getting somebody to support that with me. Obviously, I was a Honda guy forever. Went to them for quite a few years. And they're like, no, we don't see it. We don't see it. And one day, I'll never forget the day. One day, I was out on a morning run with my wife. And Rod had called me from Triumph. He's like, hey, I understand you want to do an adventure business. And so I kind of was telling him the story, and he's like, we're in, whatever it takes. We want to do it. We want to sell adventure bikes. We're going to support you. And so from that day on, it's kind of, you know, full speed ahead. And so I put together an adventure business. Last year, as you said, was the first year. And we're showcasing what Michigan has to offer, what Triumph has to offer. Come hang out with Jeff Stanton, and it's been super cool bonding with a lot of people, making great relationships and friendships, showing everybody what the Tiger 900 and 1200 and our scramblers like. And it's great to be a part of Triumph right now, because they're a driving force, and they're full speed ahead. You know, you talked about the MX products that are coming out, so it's just a great place to be right now. And so it's been super fun. With the adventure side of that, there's a huge demand in the adventure side right now. That whole area is just growing leaps and bounds, and it's that person that may have bought an adventure bike that used to ride on the street, or rides that adventure bike on the street, that may be lacking the talent to go out and ride in on a gravel road or some seasonal roads. And so that give me the idea to put the next step together. Let's put together an adventure school.
Yeah, so you were, it sounds like you were just very inspired by what you already knew the state of Michigan had to offer with this gorgeous terrain and trails. But prior to this, had you had a lot of experience riding adventure bikes? Is that something you did just personally?
Not so much adventure bikes. Yeah, a lot of dual sport. You know, the dual sport thing kind of broke into the adventure world. And so, yeah, I've always had a street legal dual sport that we rode in northern Michigan on all the seasonal roads and all the gravel roads that we ride now, and even the trail systems up there. So, yeah, there's always been that fire to be able to show people what Michigan has to offer. And I said when I started this, that was going to be something that I had to overcome. Everybody wants to go to Mexico or Moab and ride there. But I'm telling you, Michigan is gorgeous, especially in the fall with all the changing colors and rivers and streams and Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. We've got so much to offer and so much to see. And we make it a fun time. And it's a great time. We do, you know, small person tours, and I am able to bond with people and get to know them, and for them to get to know me better. And so that's what's as cool as anything.
That sounds great. Well, it sounds like Michigan was a really well-kept secret, and maybe we're going to let the secret out a little bit.
Yeah, the cat's slowly getting out of the bag, for sure.
So then, last season was the first season. I know initially it was really oriented around experiential rides. This season we're adding the training component of it. So you actually just had a visit from Triumph's head global trainer out in Wales, and he came out and worked with you guys a little bit. How did that experience go?
It was super great. So yeah, taking it to the next level. You know, they have a training center in Wales and Spain, and they needed to come over and certify myself and five or six other instructors that I have for their exact curriculum. You know, it's done in a fashion where it's super organized. We do a level one, level two, level three program, and to be able to be certified in that and to teach everybody the curriculum that Triumph has put together and the program they put together, and to be able to do that in America is super inspiring for me, to be able to share that with others and give people a little bit of knowledge of what it takes to be able to ride the adventure bikes or scramblers out in the dirt, to give them the confidence and to teach them that, yeah, we can take these things off the asphalt and go ride a two-track or a seasonal road and have a tremendously great time.
Yeah, so that I think what I'm excited about is with Matt Reed coming over and doing that training with you guys, is one of the things that ensured is that level one, two, three that you mentioned. That curriculum is now consistent globally. So if somebody wants to come see you for level one They'll know that it would have been the same training they would have received in Wales, but then they can go there for a level two and vice versa. Somebody does a level one over there, they can come see you and do a level two type training, or know that they already have a good baseline to come and do one of your actual adventure experience rides.
Absolutely, and that's what they're seeing. They're seeing somebody will do a level one in Wales and then go do a level two in Spain, and by making these throughout the world, you know, they're talking about open them up in some other countries. Individuals will be able to move around, travel, ride adventure bikes, see different territories, different things, different sites, and it's super impressive, the program that everybody's putting together here at Triumph.
So for somebody that owns an adventure bike, but they've never been off pavement before, how would your level one curriculum get them ready for that? Because I imagine a lot of people that, even if they've been riding for many years, that might be a little bit intimidating. But you do it in a way that really you can take any skill level rider and get them riding off of pavement in one day?
Absolutely. Within one day, we got a big arena that's super safe. We don't go on the road till we spend a full day just on the basics in basically a big grass field, super safe. We work on skids, we work on braking, we work on ruts, clutch control, throttle control, body positions, just everything that it takes to give them really the confidence that it takes to be able to go out and do what we do on the dirt and ride gravel roads. So we'll work with them for a day just on body positions. Like I said, breaking, you know, all the curriculum that Matt has put together on the Triumph, the TAE, as we call it, Triumph Adventure Experience. And then we take them out and, do 30, 40 miles on dirt roads and give them the confidence and kind of set that hook in their lip that, hey, yeah, this can be done, and this is a fun thing to do.
No, and it really is a fun thing to do. So if you've listened to this before, I've mentioned this, but I'll mention it again. Prior to coming to Triumph, I have never been off-road. And I got to go to a really cool thing that was an industry thing for many, many years. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, but it was called Trek, and it was organized by the previous owners of Cycle World magazine. They did it for, I think well over 20 years, and just a lot of industry people came together. But that was my first taste being off pavement, and we climbed a mountain. I jumped on a 250 and climbed a mountain with those guys. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just tried to keep up. But it really opened my eyes, and it was. And now I have a Scrambler 1200, and I'll go about an hour and a half west of where I live is Talladega Forest, and it's just trails for miles and miles and miles. But I mean, that first time is wow. This is what riding can be. It's just I'd ridden on road the whole time, and it gave me such this sense of adventure, and it felt like nothing I had felt before on two wheels.
Absolutely, no different than what we did here today or yesterday here in New York. We take some pavement out and you just start hitting gravel roads all out through the mountains, and it was just a gorgeous place to ride here. All kinds of streams and rivers, and you just, as you say, you get the feel that you don't even see that in a car, and it's unfortunate that most people in the country don't get to see that until they get out on an adventure bike, and it's uncharted territory to be able to go out and do that on an adventure bike and take the time and just go explore. That's what it's about. It's absolutely gorgeous.
And then, so speaking of gorgeous, one of the cool things about your school is you found a gorgeous facility to host the training at. What's the facility that it's at?
Yeah, we're based out of Big Rapids, Michigan, and it's a place called Two Hats Ranch. Another business that I have in Michigan, I raise whitetail deer, and it's a big hunting preserve, and it's kind of the off season throughout the summer, and so I use them for their five-star food and lodging. We're based in Big Rapids, and on our three-day rides we'd do 150 200 mile clover leafs. We stay at the same place, five-star food every night, lunches throughout the day, and I use them for the food and lodging, and it's just a super great place to stay. And all our TA, our adventure training is based right there. We got an arena right there. We stay there. They house us, and it's all done in one spot. Super super professional, super clean, super nice place to stay. It's a good combination for both of us.
So you're going to have me up sometime, right?
You're more than welcome anytime.
It sounds just absolutely incredible. I can't wait to see it myself. I haven't had the privilege yet, but it sounds amazing. I can't wait to go. I did ride with Matt in Wales, and that was amazing. So just I have a sense of what the training is, and you learn so much. I mean, and I didn't do the full thing with him. We just played around because I was taking a tour of the facility, but I mean, maybe in an hour worth of training, I really picked up some skills and just little hints here and there. And one of the cool things is just being on comms with the trainer. So you're not just following him around, but I mean, we're on comms the whole time. And just being able to hear from the trainer in real time of, hey, just move your foot a little bit like that. You can make changes on the fly. So you guys are doing that as well, right?
Absolutely. And that's huge. I don't have to stop somebody and talk to it, you know, to explain something. I can do it right in their ear. Like you said, body position, finger position, you know, watch that rut, do it a certain way. So yeah, it's a great program. Excited to put it all together. And like you say, in a day, we can teach you so much on hill descents and hill recoveries and just the little basic knowledge that it takes to be able to handle any circumstance when you're out there adventure riding.
Yeah. And then and bikes are included?
Bikes are included. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sweet. And then once you've done the training, then because I know you have a great staff of trainers, then like add-on packages or if you want to come back, then you do these entirely separate, just guided tours with you?
Absolutely. You go to the website, jeffstantonadventures.com. We do the adventure training itself, you know, 1, 2, 3 day adventure training. And then we've got a whole list of adventure rides. We do private rides. We do fall tours, 2 day tours, 3 day tours, color tours. So lots of options there. I really want to focus on the fall in Michigan, because that's the beauty in Michigan is in the fall when the leaves are changing and in the color opportunity there. So yeah, lots of great opportunities to coach and teach people how to ride adventure bikes and then go out and explore the beauty of Michigan and ride the 900s or the scramblers or the 1200s.
That's great. So so this is probably the biggest, let's just call it what it is. It's probably the biggest plug we've ever done on the episode, but it's all very interesting. So I love talking about adventure bikes with you in the school. I encourage anybody to go check out Jeff Stanton Adventures and participate and go take the training, learn how to ride off-road. But I know a lot of listeners will probably be remiss if I don't come back to motocross stuff, because people love you and they're interested in hearing about that from you. And I'm going to take some inspiration from one of our dealers, Bill Brooks, because Triumph Waukesha had a grand opening event and you came and I watched you interview with Bill a little bit on site, and he asked some great questions. So I'm going to ask some of those just because, and he asked them because he is such a mega fan that he knew the right things to ask. So one of the ones that was interesting to me is it's getting to know you as a person and as a rider and what it was like coming up. But before you were a champion, I'm sure you had lots of heroes in the sport. Who were some of the guys that you really looked up to? And then what was it like getting on the same footing as those guys?
Yeah, as a young rider, you know, like I said earlier, you know, when you're, let's say 14, 15, and you're at that breaking point, you really start, you know, focusing on the professional racing and who's doing what. And for me, it was Bob Hanna. So I was 14, 15 years old. We go to the Pontiac Supercross, and Bob Hanna was just killing everybody. He wasn't afraid to run his mouth and tell everybody he was going to whip their butt and go out and do it. So, you know, I looked up to Bob Hanna in his riding and his just complete domination, you know. And no different than today's world, I'm sure. You know, right now everybody's looking up to Chase Sexton because he's dominating all the little kids. And so Bob was that guy for me. And so coming up through the ranks, I raced him along the way, and he was pretty much the last year he raced was my second year professionally. And so to be able to go out there and battle against him and beat him, you know, as a childhood hero, it's you know, probably inside it's a little bit sad, but it also is a good feeling as well. And so I'll never forget Bob's last race. He came back and tried to do a big push at Southwick, Massachusetts. He was on a Suzuki at that time, and being from Michigan, riding in the sand, I won Southwick every year, just dominated. And so I remember lapping Bob at that race. And so in the back of your head, it was like, wow, this was my childhood hero.
Yeah.
And to be able to come back and do that, it was satisfying for me, but also a little sad there, to be honest with you. You know, you got to have some heart and some feeling there. But Bob was kind of my childhood hero, and to be able to come back and do it and race it and put it all together is awesome.
Well, so an interesting thing, you said, you know, you started competing against your older brother and you got very competitive with him, and then, you know, growing up there was other guys that you looked up to and heroes, and then eventually you beat them. But so what is that? I imagine having these older, more experienced, but better guys that you're chasing after is a certain kind of motivation. Once you've crossed that peak and now you're the best guy, what is that like mentally, and how do you motivate yourself when you're not chasing anybody anymore?
Yeah, that's tough. And so, you know, to pull that back in full circle, if you asked Jeremy McGrath who his hero was, and he said this more than once, that his hero was Jeff Stanton, and if you ask him what was the best race he ever had, and he'll tell you that it was Anaheim when I had the number one plate and he beat me. So it goes full circle, just every 5 years in this sport, that, you know, there's always a new guy coming in. And so, yeah, keeping the motivation to race professionally for year after year, all the training that we put into it, you know, man, 89, 90, 91, 92, I did 50 to 52 races a year. Almost every weekend. You know, we'd race all the races in the States. We'd race the Supercross season, the Outdoor Nationals, and then after the Outdoor Nationals, back in those years, the European races were absolutely huge. So I'd go to Europe, race two or three nights a week in these big invitational races. And so just the intensity and training and the travel and the racing that many races, it's super tough to stay motivated and stay healthy and stay humble. And ultimately, that's what burned my career out, is the amount of races that I did for so many years.
Yeah, okay. That I totally understandable. But it's also very interesting because, you know, in my the sport that I've been in, fighting, I think a lot of guys have a really hard time stopping. And I mean, it was the same for me. I was never at upper ranks whatsoever, but it's still hard to stop doing something that you love doing. And so just the grind of it is what let you know it was time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had reached a point to where the weekly training, the weekly travel, I can tell you the exact race that I made my decision. It was a Supercross race, and it was to the point where I was having no fun. I was getting my butt kicked, and I was working harder and harder and harder. And it's just, I just did it with such intensity because I had to. You know, I wasn't the most talented guy. I made up all my race wins and my championships in hard work. I had to physically train myself to where I knew mentally I was ready every weekend. And if I took a week off or 2 weeks off mentally, I knew that I wasn't prepared. So just the amount of preparation that I did daily and weekly to keep me mentally to that level, to where I knew mentally I was strong. I mean, I'm sure it's the same in fighting. You know, if you're not doing your training, you're a mental wreck. And
yep,
that's how I was. I had to train and prepare myself. So mentally, when I was on that starting line, I knew I was ready. And if I didn't, that little Pac-Man was always in the back of my head. You're not ready. You're not ready. You're going to get your butt kicked. You're going to get your butt kicked.
Oh, those are bad demons.
Those are bad demons. And, you know, it was late in my career, and a bunch of new guys were coming in and just kicking my butt for, a year there. And it was just time.
Yeah, well, interesting. I imagine in your sport, because this is, I see a lot of fighters that they'll get really in shape for the fight and have a hard training camp, and then they'll relax afterwards. They'll put on some weight, and those are the guys that never really quite make it. If you look at the champions, they're in shape year round. So, but again, I mean, as you're saying, there is a toll to that, even mentally. Physically, it's probably okay, right? Like your body reacts to it, and starts to crave being in shape, but mentally to just to push it year round, that's a bit of a mental toll, I imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can understand that. And to be able to do that, you know, for 16 Supercrosses, you know, Supercross series, what is there, 1 or 2 weekends off? To be able to do that, the Supercross season, and be the champion, you have to be there every race. You got to be awful close to that podium, in the top 5 for sure, every race, to be able to win a Supercross championship in today's world, or even back in my world. And then same for the Outdoor Nationals. You can't win six national championships and be hurt, you know, for 2 weekends. You got to be there, be consistent, and it takes preparation, mental preparation, and being ready every week.
Yeah. Now, so having lived that entire life, now I know your kids are older and they've chosen different paths, but would you have, if they wanted to pursue that, would you have encouraged them, or how would that have been for you as a father?
Well, when my kids were born, I told my wife, I said, we're going to put everything in front of them. You know, I don't want to disclude them from anything. And that's what we did. We put everything in front of them. We put bikes in front of them. We put baseballs, softballs, volleyballs, horses. And they pick and choose what they wanted to do. I didn't have that. I mean, we raced every weekend. As an amateur kid, we raced Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday. We raced that much in the state of Michigan, because back then, whoever had the most amount of points was the state champion.
So it's a volume game
back then. It's not now, but back then it was a volume game. So you raced Friday night at Milan, you raced Saturday at an outdoor track, you raced Saturday night at Delta, Ohio, and whoever had the most amount of points in their class was the champion. So as a kid we raced, that's all we did. And so I'm like, honey, I want to put all sports in front of my kids and let them choose and be successful at whatever they want.
Funny, I really appreciate that approach. I had a discussion with my wife on the drive up here this morning, because she was a swimmer, and my oldest, my 5-year-old, he's on a little neighborhood swim team right now, and he's good. He's a water bug, so he really loves it. And she's starting to talk to me, well, hey, there's this specialty school, and we could get him in. And I'm like, you know what? I love that he's doing baseball and soccer and jiu-jitsu and swimming right now. So I'm trying to keep that as long as possible, because it's just great to expose them to everything.
Absolutely. In that swim thing, that's a huge commitment. It's like the gymnastics thing. And I don't care what sport. In 2020 to 2021, 2022, 2023, these parents commit to one sport and they just dedicate, you know, to one sport. It's a love-hate relationship. I don't love it at all, but I get that you have to put in the time to be successful. But let your kids do it. Throw it all out there in front of them. You know, my son was a national champion, a trap shooter. Him and I won national championships, team, hair scramble. He loves racing. And just give them the full experience of everything. Let them pick and choose of what they want to do.
All right, that's a good approach. I want to try and do that. So you mentioned something, and this is really interesting to me, that you mentioned that, especially in your time, that Michigan was a hotbed. How did that happen? Because, you know, California, they're riding year round. How did it come about that Michigan, that has these brutal winters, became a bit of a hotbed?
Well, and I believe that was a huge part of it, is because there's time off. There's something to be said for time off in any sport, in my opinion. And I tell parents that even now. You know, some parents that I work with, their kids, they live in Michigan. They're like, what do we do for, you know, for the wintertime? I'm like, dude, let your kid play basketball. Let your kid do something else. Time off is always recharges the batteries. And I think that was always a good thing, even for myself. If I was struggling professionally, I wasn't flowing, or things weren't going right, I would take time off. I'd go up to my house in northern Michigan, and I'd just ride in the woods forget going out and motoing and doing the same routine, the same thing over and over again. So I Michigan was a huge hotbed, but you go from the 1st of April to October, and then you have a few months off to recharge your batteries. Maybe you spend a week in Florida just to go down and ride a little bit, but a time off is a good thing.
I like it. And that just resonates with what we just said. So yeah, that's interesting. So that I can totally see it. And very glad that it worked in that area, because it's great that, the off-road racing is a nationwide thing, and that it's not just reserved for the South and those year-round climates.
Yeah. Now it seems like it's the hotbed is Florida. You know, everybody's kind of gone from California to Florida for the climate, really, and a little bit of rain and conditioning. But there's just no breaks in California. You just do it and you just get in a routine, and there's a norm. There's no peaks and no valleys. So yeah. I think you peak and then you have a little valley, have a little time off, charge the batteries, regroup. And you take a month off, and then come April, you're like charged up. You know, let's go racing, and you do it all summer and a little bit in the fall, and it's all a good thing.
So with the Florida thing, I think one of the other thing that is drawing a lot of riders there is that there's a lot of like almost camps now, right, or teams. So, and I think when you were coming up, everybody was on their own. Right, and now everybody's sort of training together.
I couldn't have done it. I could not do what they do now. There's no way. I think any champion that is a multi-time champion has self-motivation, and it takes self-motivation, in my opinion, to be super successful. And now these kids are just—they're programmed. They're told when to get up. They're told to get on the bicycle. They're told how many motos are going to do, how many laps are going to do. And they're programmed. And so I still, the kids I work with, I still teach self-motivation. You got to get out of bed. You got to get up and go for a run, go for a bike ride. You got to do things yourself to be successful in life. So if these kids don't make it in the real world of motocross, and they have to go out and face a real job or real life, they're going to struggle.
Yeah, that's interesting. So they're getting the motocross skills, but maybe not necessarily the life skills that they're going to need.
They're getting absolutely zero life skills. They were homeschooled. They didn't make it through eighth grade education, and then they're told what to do. And if they're not a Jet Lawrence and going to make a crap ton of money, and they're a 5th through 10th place rider, they're going to have a big life struggle.
Yeah, that's tough. So without going to those camps then, kind of in the era that preceded that, how did you learn? It was everything self-taught?
Self-taught. I did some motocross schools. I went to a couple of Gary Bailey motocross schools, but self-taught. Learn from your mistakes, learn along the way. And like I said, when I signed with American Honda, I surrounded myself with good people. I lived with Rick Johnson for a winter. If you want to be successful, you have to surround yourself with successful people. And I did that, and I learned that. I hired one of the best trainers and trained with him, 4 or 5 days a week. And then I had the self-motivation to do it. Yeah, Jeff Spencer put the program in front of me, but he didn't hold my hand. I didn't go bicycle riding with him every day. I did it myself. I looked at the daily program. I get out of bed. I do the running, and I do the bicycling. I do the weight training. And I did my motos, and there's no way that I could have. And I'm seeing a little bit with Cooper Webb. There's no way that I could have daily intensity that they do at those places, and then go race them on the weekends. I mean, I hated my competitors.
And they're all friends now, right?
They're all buddies now. How would it be to have to race your brother every weekend?
Yeah, no, that, I come from, yeah, I'm very competitive, and I have a hard time being friendly, even in this industry. I mean, we're just like working professionals, but I think I bring some of my like athletic background even into my work life. And, I'm looking around at all the other trucks here, and like I'll be cordial, but we're not friends.
And so, yeah, so that whole training camp, it's great for the guys that own it. And for the riders, you know, they don't have to own a piece of property and worry about the maintenance and the watering. And so that aspect is good, but I'm telling you, there's no way that I could have done it back in the day. They're making it work, maybe because they don't have any other choice. For me, as a young inspiring rider, I wanted to invest in property, and I had the self motivation to do it all myself and make it happen.
That's great. So I think this has been probably one of the most inspiring interviews we've ever done. So thank you for that, Jeff. Maybe it was this great environment. We started the day inspired by the glorious nature, and that just got into kind of the mindset of a champion. And I don't even know if we intended to get there, but that's where we got. So I really appreciate you giving us all those details. Before we wrap up, I think, of course, we want to send people to the school, but you're going to be out and about this summer doing appearances and promoting the school. If anybody's listening now and wants to come to a motorcycle event, where are they going to be able to see you this summer?
Well, we're talking about doing something at South Dakota, so we'll see if we can put that together. We'll keep everybody informed, but yeah, just super proud to be a part of the Triumph family and the brand loyalty that is there. Yeah, get out on adventure bikes. Triumph's going to be at numerous events coming ahead almost every weekend. We were talking about it last night. So lots of opportunities to get out and demo these bikes, see the product that we have to offer. And, let's get out on an adventure bike or street bike and enjoy the riding. That's what we're here for.
Love it. So as Jeff said, Triumph will be on a ton of events this summer. If you want to see where we're at, just go to triumphontour.com. We're going to welcome Jeff to at least a handful of those events. So he's a busy man, but we'd love to have him anytime we can. Thank you for listening to this great interview with Jeff Stanton. If you are interested in visiting his school, just go to jeffstantonadventures.com. You can see the full course curriculum on there. Apologize for all the noise in the background, but what an incredible opportunity to sit down with Jeff at a motorcycle rally and hear some bikes and talk to him about really what it took to become what he became as a six-time world champion. So that's all for now. And until next time, ride safe.